Prosper Insurance has an offer that's tough to beat and will benefit you one way or another. When you get a quote with Prosper Insurance, if they can't beat your home or auto quote, they will send you an official Washington Football Team legend jersey. Of course, if they do beat it, you'll be able to afford your own jersey or two. I can tell you from experience, the quote I received was $2,000 less than my previous insurer. It might not be like that for everyone, but why not find out? Finding the right insurance can be a pain, but Prosper makes it easy while providing great service and advice. Their licensed advisors shop the market with top companies like Allstate, Nationwide, Progressive, Travelers, and more to find you the perfect coverage at a great rate, which helps explain why Prosper has more than 1,000 five-star reviews on Google. You have nothing to lose. Simply visit prosper.insurance/kime to get your quote and a possible Washington Football Team legend jersey. That's prosper.insurance/kime, K-E-I-M. This offer is good from September 13th to September 30th. You know what else is cool? They plant a tree for every policy they write. That's more than 66,000 trees and counting. Get ready to feel good about your insurance.
Empire.
Hello and welcome to my podcast. Today, a victory podcast with the voice of the Washington Football Team, Bram Weinstein, as we rehash the crazy 30-29 victory over the New York Giants. It's hard to keep track of all the twists and turns in that one. We'll get into the game, but we'll also discuss initially what it's like to call a game like that. It's kind of crazy. Taylor Heinicke love, and what the hell is going on with the D? You can follow Bram on Twitter at RealBramW, and you can read my work on ESPN.com, of course. I'm also on Instagram, John Kime ESPN. I have a story up now on ESPN.com on Taylor Heinicke, of course, and the win over the Giants. There will also be another one posted on Saturday about his composure in those late game situations. It's a Heinicke week, folks. Also, check out the article that ran Thursday where we ranked the Washington quarterbacks since Mark Rippon led the Super Bowl win. Maybe it's a little more fun to read after Thursday night. Anyway, let's get to it. Here's my conversation with Bram Weinstein. Bram, we've covered a lot of games. That's going to be one that we're going to remember for a long time because of how crazy it was at the ending. Before we get into the Taylor Heinicke, you know, story and magic and whatever, for you, what was it like to call that game in the last 5 minutes?
It was a blast. It was really, 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 really fun. I the funny part is, like, you know, we always have these expectations of what's going to happen. And shootout with the Giants was not really on the table, you know, so I didn't like really walk in thinking, oh, there's gonna be a couple of offenses that can't be stopped. You know, that was not, you know, any kind of level of expectation. But, you know, as the second half just kind of matriculated a little bit, you kind of saw what was coming. And, you know, I think there's a lot of issues to talk about. Clearly, sure, the Washington defense being incapable of stopping the Giants offense at all, I mean, is a story in itself. But it was really, I mean, just to make a long answer short, it was as fun as you might imagine it might be calling a game that ends like that.
See, and the funny thing is for me, it's fun to watch those games. It is not fun to be a writer during those games because I have to file something right within a few minutes after the game ends. So I have a story, you know, you're starting to write a story in the fourth quarter. One of them is about how the defense is not living up to expectations at all. And if this is going to change, it's got to start with them, et cetera. Cause that's planning for a loss. Then Heinicke has this, you know, but the other side is like, what if Heinicke does this? So you start planning for a Heinicke underdog hero story. So you start writing that one in addition, and then he gets a touchdown. So it's like, okay, good. I stick with this and blah, blah, blah. And then he throws the interception. Then it's like, oh, Heinicke was almost the hero, but then he threw this interception. And then you have to go back the other way. So those last 5 minutes for a writer are really, really tough. As much fun as it is to watch and to see that unfold, it makes for some stress. So I'm glad you had fun calling it, because it's,
I mean, think of the NFL must be watching this, because Monday night was maybe crazier than this game last night between the Raiders and the Ravens. And then Washington and New York had this. They must be jumping for joy. I mean, getting these ridiculous, crazy finishes in the ends of their games.
Yeah, absolutely. And it, like I said, it's fun to be at, but when, you know, just there's a lot of whatever. But let's talk about the people, because people don't care too much about what we have to do. So Taylor Heinicke, I mean, I don't – what do you have to say about him now?
Again, like – I wanted to temper expectations, because I know the fan base is so behind him, and he was a people's choice thing. And what he did in that playoff game was really beyond comparison, considering his experience level and, you know, what had to be a lack of acumen for what they were doing. Just he'd been here such a short period of time. And I mean, like, he's infectious for them because of that. I mean, he almost pulled off what would have been, if they had somehow knocked off Tampa Bay in the playoffs, I think that would have gone down as one of the greatest upsets of all time. And, you know, I think people around here, and you know this, and I know this, you know, that they're dying for, you know, to have someone to rally behind at that position. And it just has not materialized in a very long time. It was funny. I was doing the pregame show and we were talking about your piece a little bit, and about, you know, how long it's been. And the list gets really ugly once you get past like 10, 11 on it, of all the different quarterbacks who've come through and played here, you know, in the last 30 years. And I was talking to Santana Moss, and he was like, what, you know, basically, why can't we ever, you know, either get lucky or find the right guy? And I go, you know, honestly, it actually predates that. You know, Joe Theismann got hurt in the mid 1980s. Jay Schrader came in, Doug Williams came in, Mark Rippon came in. None of them were really long-term answers for them. They just happened to be winning with those guys at that time. And that's really kind of the difference. And I don't know. There's something about this dude. I mean, like, obviously there's something about him. He's a total gamer. The stage is not too big. He won that game twice for them. He also blew it for him, but he won that game twice for them, you know, last night. And when was the last time you saw that with a quarterback around here? So I get why everybody is so kind of excited about him. He really kind of, it's funny. There's this kind of almost like wide-eyed and not wide-eyed experience with him all at the same time. He acts like he's been there. You wouldn't think that was in business school last fall and basically out of the league. And at the same time, there's this, you know, almost curiosity, like, how could this be happening? You know, there's a Kurt Warner aspect to it. So it's really cool. It's really great. I don't want to, you know, get too far ahead of ourselves, but that is a good defense they played last night. Yeah. Well, defense has controlled them in the past. He had no problem with them. So, you know, I got to hand it to him. He was terrific.
Well, you know, it's funny that you bring up that defense, because I saw a couple of comments on social media about how, well, the Giants are a bad team. Well, maybe. Well, first of all, we don't know that yet. I mean, they played poorly last week. We know that. But what I know is that's a good defense. It's whether or not they're a good team or a bad team, that's a good defense that he picked apart. And it's funny, because there's a lot of things that kid, you know, he's not a big kid. He doesn't have a big arm. You know, he plays with a gunslinger mentality, but he doesn't always have the arm to match it. And there are sometimes a couple of throws you say, okay, you may have gotten away with one, like the one to Humphreys on the 2-minute drive. But, you know, if you say, what's it, you point to that kid, because he's got something that people gravitate to, fans, players. And you're right. Like, the thing that impressed me in those 2-minute situations, you look at how calm he is. And even on the touchdown to Ricky Seals-Jones, what impressed me is he looks down the middle. He wants Logan Thomas, looks to his second read, which I think was Terry in the seam on the left side, running a little post. He's got a gap that opens up. He could have run, and it almost looked like he thinks about it, and he sees Ricky Seals-Jones, internally he's saying he's got the height advantage on this guy. The presence of mind to not just take off for a guy who has legs like he does, to me, speaks to the poise that he showed.
He was outstanding. I mean, he just, you know, this is a don't judge a book by the cover, which is probably what's happened to him, you know, ever since graduating from college, or even maybe even
from high school.
Yeah, probably. You know, like, you know, why did he play at ODU? Probably his size. You know, like, why did he not really get any real legitimate long-term shot in the NFL? Probably his size. You know, and secondarily, which we've witnessed here this summer, he's not a guy who's going to wow you in practice. I think these kind of structured environments just don't really suit him, but put the lights on, put a big stage on it, tell him go win a game and he's ready to go. And he's not scared. There's nothing about this that seems, you know, too big for him at all. And that's a really good sign. And it's funny, like, you know, Daniel Jones, man, I mean, if he played this team every week, he'd be a Pro Bowler.
He's getting like a gold jacket.
Everyone else, you know, something ain't right. At the same time, like, look at him, like 6'4", looks the part. Obviously, he's actually, you know, fast, you know, very good with these run pass, this run option stuff. He's really good at it.
And he's not sneaky. He's not, also, I'm sorry to cut you off. He's not sneaky fast. He is fast.
He's fast.
Lyman Collins called it. He's not sneaky fast.
No, he's fast. And then the other thing, I couldn't believe this when I saw this stat yesterday coming into the game. Last year, the highest rated passer on deep throws was Daniel Jones in the NFL. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So he's got a big, accurate arm. So it does start to make this case for why the Giants don't want to turn the page on him. And yet, in so many different situations, he's wilted or had a turnover. And maybe, you know, so that's why you get to the, is the stage too big for this guy? Because it never seems to go his way. And this dude just like kind of walks in off the street, slings it around. It goes against all conventional wisdom of somebody who will have a successful career. And I think that's why everybody who covers it, like me and you, want to hit the pause button on going too crazy about a fairy tale, but we might be watching one.
I mean,
that's the crazy thing here.
I can give you all the reasons why I think it won't go a certain way, but I can't tell you that it will go that way because I'm not going to do that because, you know, crazy things happen and we know that. And it's funny you bring up how he's not going to wow you. I was talking to someone in the offseason about him and just like how exactly like what you said, if you're bringing in, like, cause my thing was, why was he out of the league for 2 years? It's like, well, you're bringing a guy like that for a workout. He's not really going to impress you because he's not able to show you all that he can do. What you're seeing is a guy who, you know, is not a big guy again, doesn't have this big, powerful arm. So you're not really able to see. So what he did last year in the playoff game is he basically made it so that way, if he is in that situation again, he will get signed because now they saw what he could do. Before then, though, all you saw were the negatives. And sometimes you've got to look at, well, okay, what makes a guy good? And he anticipates well. You know, he knows the offense well. He knows where he's supposed to go. In some ways, Bram, and I'm going to talk about this later on here, but like when Trent Green came up and had that one big year, he was in the same offense for 4 years. He knew the offense well. So when he got his chance, he was ready. And I'm not saying Heineke's going to go on and do what he did, but I think there's a similarities in terms of he knows this offense well, and this maybe is the right spot for him with this coach. Who knows? Scott Turner.
We had talked about this a couple times on your show, and I decided not to answer the question about Fitzpatrick because I thought the amount of plays that you would be judging how his comfort level in the offense and where he would lead them. I just didn't think it'd be fair to make a judgment on him because it was such a small sample size preseason and regular season. But I mean, the comfort level between the two is night and day.
Yeah.
And here's somebody who's, you know, 17 years in the league. And here's another guy who felt like he just walked in off the street and he's like, what do you want me to do? Oh, sling it to that guy. Okay. You know, like, it's just like, there's no common sense attached to any of it. And, you know, I don't want to get this mistaken. Like, I'm not down on Fitzpatrick. I hope he gets healthy. I hope he comes back. I think he makes them better by midseason if he is able to be healthy. And I wasn't turning the page on him. But there was a clear, like, one guy's very comfortable here and the other guy's kind of figuring it out. And I know that they were leaning on the guy with all the experience because they thought it was better served for them long-term to lean on the guy with all of the experience. But I mean, it's just night and day what has been happening since he's come in. And, you know, I there's a reason for that. And it's really him. You know, there's some kind of competitive spirit in him. You know it when you see it. You know, will he take them far? I don't know, but I think we're all locked in for the ride now to see what's going to happen next.
Yeah, and I think it's because he's a bit of a mystery. And again, I can point out all the reasons logically where you say, hey, at some point it could go this way. Don't, because you see this, and this, but there's still mystery to him. And I still want to sit there and watch him every week because Well, when does that happen? Does it happen? When? You know, is this Gardner Minshew who comes in and has these great things? But what I know is that we've seen him play 11 quarters now, and he's looked pretty good in each of those quarters.
Look, weird things happen. I mean, yeah. Nick Foles won a Super Bowl. He was a backup. Yeah. Philadelphia. He won the Super Bowl, and ever since then, he really hasn't done very much, you know, and really hadn't done very much beforehand. So right place, right time, people who trust you. You know, he earned the right to compete on this team. It's why they gave him the contract that they did. He earned the right to be told that you are pseudo in a starting quarterback competition because of the way he performed in the spring. And now, you know, they've said, all right, kid, here it is. And he was just outstanding on short rest, no time to really think about it, no time to really prepare adequately because of the short week, big bright lights. You know, some guys don't perform well there. He shined, you know, absolutely shined. And again, I want to reiterate, and I agree with you, the Giants defense is not bad.
No, they're not.
It's like the Giants defense last year was really good. Top five in takeaways. The Giants defense was top 10 in total defense. Like if it wasn't for turnovers from them on the offense, their record would have been different. And if it wasn't for Sudfeld coming in that Eagles game, they might've won the division last year. Right. So, you know, they're not bad. They might be off to a slow start, not unlike Washington is, but go look at what they do and you'll see, like, they're going to turn it around too at some point.
Week one may be over, but the season is just getting started at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. To kick off week two, DraftKings is giving new customers $200 in free bets instantly when they bet $1 on any football game. Listen up, because you don't want to miss this. Head to the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and place a bet of $1 on any Week 2 game to receive $200 in free bets instantly. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use promo code CON to receive $200 in free bets when you place a $1 bet on any football game. That's promo code KEIM, K-E-I-M, this week at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Must be 21 or older, New Jersey, Indiana, or Pennsylvania only. New customers only. Minimum $5 deposit and $1 wager required. One per customer. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details.
Fun to have a different story to chronicle because it's just, you're right though. You know what impressed me too is a couple tough first drives, doesn't get anything going, and then he hits a big pass to De'Ami Brown and gets it going, settles him in, makes the turnover. Killer spot, killer. Comes back and leads a game-winning drive. And, you know, of that game-winning drive, too, and we'll get to the defense in a minute because that's a huge concern. But one of the things from a personal note, I was happy to see Dustin Hopkins get a second chance on that final one for two reasons. One, because he's a good guy and his family's going through a tough time. There was a death in the family. I think it was his brother-in-law. I believe that's what it was. And one thing going through this is they've been sick, going through all of this struggles in the summer and all that. He was dealing with the other stuff, but he never would make an excuse for like, well, I'm distracted. It was never like, hey, I've got this over here and I've got this over here. And it's nice to see a guy like that have something that he can celebrate. Whatever you think of him, it was just nice. From a personal level, it was nice to see that.
Yeah, I was happy for him too. I mean, obviously, you know, he's been under the spotlight. Last year, his percentage was not really good enough, frankly. And then, so this year, there was a lot of talk about, you know, is he going to be replaced? And then they had the weird issues with the whole operation with a new snapper in the preseason. And I even talked to Ron Rivera about it before the opener and was like, is this behind you? You know, like, tell me the truth. Is this behind you? And he said, yes, it is. So, and it's shown out here, you know, in the first couple of weeks, he had the miss from 50 plus in week one. And he had this one the other night that could have killed him. They get fortunate to get the penalty, but I'm with you. I'm happy for him.
What, anything else jump at you in offense?
McLaurin was outstanding. Yeah. The reincorporation of JD McKissick, which I thought was a miss. There was a lot of things from week one that I thought were odd. Yeah. Like when McLaurin isn't targeted for an entire half, when McKissick has one target, like these are the guys they relied on and these are the guys that are playmakers for them. And I appreciate that they have all these other players here now and they're going to try to incorporate all of them, But, you know, when you need to kind of get going, you go back to what you know, and they did, like, in a big way with McLaurin, McKissick, Thomas to an extent. I think that was good to see. I mean, it was spread around. Heinicke spread it around. He looked for Dyami Brown. He looked, Humphreys made a couple of big plays. So, you know, this is like somewhat, I think, what we thought with all the weapons the offense could be, you know, if the line would hold up. And they haven't even seen Curtis Samuel yet. So
right. I think it was, well, and who knows?
If, like, you know, those numbers on McKissick and McLaurin, I think, can't be underrated. I mean, these are guys that are going to be big time contributors for them. And if they're not, that's a schematic problem.
Right.
Really.
And I'll say with JD, I was surprised last week as well, because I know how much they like him. I mean, they really like him. I was talking to somebody this summer, and it was about Antonio Gibson. And the comment was, everybody keeps talking about us getting the ball more to him, and we're going to try and do that. It's like, but you can't forget about JD McKissick, because this is a guy that they really trust in those roles, and you see why. And that was a really nice out and up route. He sold the out route on the 56-yard gain. And just a nice play. All right. Defense, disappointing. I don't even know where to begin with them, because they're not, the four-man rush isn't getting enough pressure, and the coverage isn't holding up behind it. I'm genuinely shocked at how poorly they've played in the first two games.
I am too. There was another stat that I saw before the game that was really eye-opening. You know, in rewatching the Chargers game, you know, initially, just my gut in when they played live, it was like, well, they tried to rush with four and they just didn't get a lot of pressure, and Herbert killed them. And then when I rewatched, it was obvious they didn't just rush with four.
No, fact,
they were bringing people.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it turned out that they brought pressure, or attempted to, the third most of anybody in the NFL, and they didn't get any pressure. And their percentage of actually getting pressure on Herbert was one of the lowest in the league. So it wasn't even just that they tried to bring four, but when they did bring Bostic or Holcomb, or very little off the edge, but if they tried anything, it wasn't working either. And that's really disconcerting. I mean, if you're actually going to blitz with that, you know, defensive line, you should have some free pass to the quarterback along the way. That's not happening. That said, I mean, game two was much better in terms of at least getting pressure on Jones. John Allen was terrific in the center of the line. But still, I mean, the second half, Jones with a clean pocket is actually quite accurate.
Yes.
And you know, I know everyone wants to make fun of him because of what his record is. And
he does really have talent.
He does have talent. And more and more and more, what you see is, like, there's just something with him in these tight situations that go awry. And some of that's probably on him, but this is problematic. I mean, the strength of this team, we know what the strength of the team is. If it's not going to be the strength of the team, we all have to adjust our expectations.
Yeah. And big time.
We can't turn Heinicke into Pat Mahomes yet, you know? So, like, no. At some point, like, they're going to have to, and I keep believing, like, this is going to turn. Like, they just have too much talent. The talent will take over at some point when they get on the same page, but they're clearly not there yet. And, like, frankly, like, the Hopkins, if Slayton catches that ball where he's 15 yards behind the secondary, we're not talking about a game winning field goal.
No,
you know, if they didn't make that hold call on the Jones touchdown, we might not be talking about a game winning field goal.
Offsides on the offsides penalty on the field goal.
I mean, they were very fortunate last night, and the defense in particular was very fortunate last night. And I think you and I agree with this, that Chargers score is not emblematic of how much better, like, LA's offense was than the Washington defense. So I don't know what the answer is, but this is not good. I mean, and it's not close to good, and it's far from what you might expect from them at this point.
It is. And what troubles me with the pressures, and the last sack they got on Jones last night was a slot corner blitz from Kendall Fuller, and he got home free, and he rushed that. He was on Chase Young's side, and it was a good, well-timed, well-executed blitz. But what concerns me is that they're not getting home with four. And the benefit of having these kind of players up front is that you don't always have to blitz. You shouldn't have to blitz to apply pressure. Now, some of those blitzes are going to be four-man blitz rushes because it may be a fire zone or whatever. And so you're dropping a guy, but you're overloading a side. But they're not getting home with those four. And that, to me, is what's concerning, because they've got to be able to do that because that's the strength of their team. And it allows you to play more with coverage, and it makes it harder for a quarterback to pick that apart. So that is where I'm at. And then also, Bram, too, the other part is the undisciplined play. And you saw it on the Barkley run. You saw it on the Jones run, where guys are not doing what they're supposed to be doing, whether it's, you know, on the Barkley run. I'm not sure exactly what happened. I know that Chase Young was on that side, and there was a big gap there. And I know I don't know if he was stunning to the middle or if he read the play and he thought it was going to the middle, but somehow he leaves that area. Now, maybe somebody else is supposed to, maybe it was a stunt and somebody else is supposed to get out there. I don't know. What I know is nobody was there, and that can't happen. That keeps happening. And then on the Jones touchdown, or almost touchdown run, then Landon Collins is like, we've seen this guy keep the ball in this zone read. We've seen that. And yet they didn't play for it again. And that is also what is troubling, because those are just fundamental discipline mistakes. And those have to get better. But I'm with you. Like, I think there's too much talent there for it not to change. But when is it going to change? And they have a tough slate of quarterbacks coming up that, you know, if they don't get it right this season, you know, you look at the season, like, it's very early, but they have a more favorable schedule in the second half of the year. You've got to be in position to take advantage of that. And that starts with the defense.
Yeah. It's funny. I think of them kind of like an NBA team where they go through these slumps of the regular season, but they have Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, James Harden, all this stuff. And you just know, like, in the end, everything short of injuries, it's going to turn around. The cream's just going to rise to the top and it's going to take over. And there they are, you know, making a run because that's their strength. I look at these guys like Sweat, Young, Payne, and Allen, and I go, eventually, I don't know what's going to click or when it's going to click, but it will. Like, this can't possibly go on the entire year. And I'm really interested to hear what Ron Rivera say today, because it is 2 weeks in a row. And what's really disappointing about this is everybody knows how marginalized the Giants offense was. Barkley actually looked a little bit better than I anticipated last night. Yeah. After everything I'd heard and what I saw from the Denver game, I didn't know if he was even going to play. I actually thought he looked okay. He didn't look like himself, but he looked okay.
He looked better than he did last week. That's for sure.
He did. And then their offensive line is in tatters. And then they have a devastating injury to the center, you know, who's the backup center or the guard who was the center. And now they're bringing in another guy who'd been there a week, you know, like, this is a classic. They're going to get overwhelmed, you know, by this group. And it literally did not happen. And I don't know this. The Giants scored on every drive that they had in the second half. I mean, that's ridiculous. Yeah. I mean, like, it really is. I mean, based on their personnel issues, based on the fact that they're not that kind of offense, and based on the defense that we supposedly have here, that's not right. You know, that's not right. And it is for cause for major, major, major concern. And they better figure it out quick, because if they don't, they're going to get toasted by this guy next week. So let's see.
Yeah. And I think it goes back to, we've talked about maturity, and Ron Rivera has talked about that. Last thing, you look at for all those issues, is it good or bad that even for all the issues, like, they haven't played that great. They haven't done this. They're 1-1 with the chance to have been, maybe not a great chance to be 2-0, because you look at the game and, you know, who knows what happens if they don't fumble. Does Herbert still lead them down? We don't know. But they've been in a position to be 2-0 despite how they've played. Is that okay? Or do you look and say, you know, part of me says, okay, well, that shows the mindset. The other part of me says, that's fine, but this stuff adds up. And if you don't get it fixed, you're not going to be in position to win.
Yeah, I think it adds up, but I trust that, and this has happened for years with the Rivera teams, they get better as they go.
They do, second half of the year.
I trust that. You know, the other thing that's happened here in the first couple of weeks, they've got like 17 or 18 penalties. You know,
that's right.
There's a lot going on here, like a lot of mistakes. And I know that one on Chase Young was bogus. You know, that was ridiculous. You know,
John Allen could have gotten one on his body slam.
Young was,
I agree with that
to do, like, he's ridiculous.
I think the intent of that rule is for that particular play is a difficult one.
Yeah, it is. And I mean, you know, listen, last week they got a fortunate call with that, like Joey Bosa got a ridiculous one last week where he hit Heinicke or Fitzpatrick, but it wasn't late and it was while he was throwing, and And all of a sudden they threw a flag on him. I don't know what these guys are supposed to do, but it, on the whole, there's a lot of penalties going on here and most of them are warranted. So they're making a ton of mistakes and they're missing assignments on defense. And I have to think it's going to get cleaned up because Rivera's history is it does. And they too do typically get better and they're not, and, you know, his teams, there's hallmarks of his teams and they're not mistake riddled teams. So I keep thinking it's going to get better. And that's why I feel like right now it's just, I don't care how you get by. If you get by and you're hanging around 500 until everything kind of gets fixed, then you've given
yourself. They'll be in good shape. I think they'll be in good shape in that case.
And I believe that they will. I do.
Yeah. And they'll be in really good shape if that's the case. So we'll see. But it makes it, certainly makes it interesting. Bram, appreciate it. Get some rest.
Thanks. See ya.
That's it for this episode. I'll be back with another one early next week, hoping to have one Monday, but it might be Tuesday morning at the latest. We'll talk to you next time.